CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. It is April 1st, 2029. The North Korean missile launch is a MIRVed ICBM, said to be a test. However, it exceeds the expectations and triggers the U.S. missile defense system. No interception. Within days, the U.S. calls on North Korea to control its mobile missiles in sites that the U.S. can watch, asks the U.N. for a blockade, and puts U.S. strategic forces on DEFCON 3. The crisis begins. I welcome Henry Sokolsky. He's the executive director of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center, who introduces us to a scenario that is called tabletop, used to be called wargaming, is entertained by Henry and his colleagues, and what is to be done, what is to learn about not only the threat from North Korea and the bad offices of the People's Republic of China expected, but also the limits of the Outer Space Treaty, a Cold War document, 1967, and the inability of the new version of the Outer Space Treaty, the Artemis Accords, with two dozen signatories, to answer these questions. The Outer Space Treaty is signed by then Soviet Union, now Russia, and signed by then the People's Republic of China, now the People's Republic of China. It is not, to my knowledge, signed by North Korea. Henry, a very good evening to you. The scenario is at hand.
It is.
The U.S. is on DEFCON 3, and that means that the U.S., Japan, and the Republic of Korea, South Korea, are meeting in this emergency. There are about to be some threats made by both sides, but we want to establish right now about the Outer Space Treaty and what it says about the capabilities available to North Korea to provoke, to threaten, and to intimidate the U.S., the Republic of Korea, and Japan. Good evening to you, Henry.
Good evening. I should state for the record that North Korea has acceded to the Outer Space Treaty. So even though it didn't technically sign, it is a member and of that treaty.
The scenario presents itself, however, that North Korea is provoking. The U.S. is countered by going to DEFCON 3. What happens next is that the U.S. seeks a mediation with the PRC. What is the likelihood of that turning to the legal language of the Outer Space Treaty?
Well, I think in the scenario, you first have an effort to pressure China, to pressure North Korea to deal with garrisoning its missiles in these three locations. Later in the scenario, the North Koreans, when they don't get the United States to agree to stop doing its intensive surveillance out of Japanese and South Korean bases, when it doesn't agree to some schedule of leaving South Korea, demilitarizing it, the North Koreans put a satellite into orbit with one of its mobile missiles. And it is at that point that we go to the Chinese, because the North Koreans say, we now have to be worried that that may have, there may be a nuclear explosion. They don't say the device has a nuclear weapon on it, but they lead us to believe that. And that's when we go again to the Chinese and say, well, surely you have to be worried about this, because you have, like us in Russia, lots of satellites in low Earth orbit. And the Chinese counsel us, saying, well, it's not clear anything's been violated or that there's a nuclear device on the satellite. You ought to listen to the North Koreans and try to mediate leaving South Korea and addressing their concerns.
The conversation, however, leads to North Korea further provoking by coming to threaten to put a rocket over the Pacific. And then on the 14th of June, these weeks are racing by with this tension. We're on the U.S. is on DEFCON 3. There will be other activities by bad actors and allies. So we're looking at a worldwide crisis. On June 14th, according to the exercise that you've conducted, the DPRK puts a rocket over the North Pacific. and that leads to a nuclear explosion in low Earth orbit. Herein lies the puzzle, what is to be done, because that explosion does not take place when the missile or the satellite is in orbit. It takes place without reaching orbit. What will that nuclear explosion do to all of the satellites that are in low Earth orbit?
Well, anything within line of sight of the explosion is going to almost certainly not survive. There may be some might last a little longer, but most will just simply immediately go off station. They will, control of those satellites and their orbits will be lost. There then is an increased prospect that those satellites might hit things they or make conjunctions, they call it, the collisions you don't want, and increase the amount of space debris. But more important, the amount of energy that's been released at low Earth orbit will energize what's called a Van Allen belt. And there will be radiation throughout low Earth orbit, at least the lower portion of low Earth orbit for sure. And that radiation will do its mischief on almost all of the satellites in low Earth orbit. And, you know, so this creates quite a large low Earth orbit dead zone, if you will.
And Ray, at this point, has North Korea violated the Outer Space Treaty, either by putting a satellite into orbit that the U.S. is unable to determine what its payload is, or by putting a rocket not into Earth orbit, but into space over the North Pacific and detonating a nuclear explosion? Are any of those things precluded by the Outer Space Treaty of 1967?
The game was really interesting in trying to answer that question. The folks from the Defense Department, which, of course, is the agency responsible for buying and operating, and if things go badly, launching intercontinental ballistic missiles with nuclear warheads that go not into orbit, but across oceans to places like China and Russia, were of the distinct impression that the Outer Space Treaty did not cover anything with a nuclear warhead unless it clearly was in orbit. The State Department officials looked at the treaty and said, well, it says, or it prohibits a nuclear weapon being placed in orbit or on station. And they said, well, on station would include anything, and therefore it is covered. And there was a bit of a debate within the U.S. government. Needless to say, the Chinese and others might have a view that, well, it's not clearly covered.
Let me read from Article 4 of the Outer Space Treaty, 1967. States parties to the treaty undertake not to place in orbit around the Earth any objects carrying nuclear weapons or any other kinds of weapons of mass destruction, install such weapons on celestial bodies, or station such weapons in outer space in any other manner. So you indicate that what you've learned from your colleagues is that we just came across something that cannot be solved. Orbit is clear, but any or station such weapons in any other manner is not clear. And this will be an argument between Beijing, Pyongyang, the U.S. and the U.N. Is that all that correct, according to your scenario?
I think the game suggested it probably would be a debate. What was even clearer, moreover, was our ability to even know if something on orbit had a nuclear explosive on it was pretty slim.
So the previous provocation, when they put a satellite into orbit, when North Korea put a satellite into orbit, the U.S. could not determine whether it had a nuclear weapon or not. In this scenario, it is not necessary for that to explode, because they then do explode a ICBM without achieving orbit, correct?
Correct. And I, in designing the game, I did this to try to tease out the debate that might ensue, and it did do that. And it also drove home how unable we are to verify. Very unsettling, but, worth knowing.
I'm speaking with Henry Sokolsky, the executive director of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center. We're playing a science fiction game called Tabletop, called War Exercise, about, in the immediate future, a provocation by the North Koreans. Part of the provocation turns on the U.S. demanding, going to DEFCON 3, and demanding that North Korea arrange its mobile missiles in such a fashion that they can be watched and surveilled and perhaps even contained. Part also of the tabletop, the war exercise, the speculation, is that this war in space is not limited to space. When we come back, I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.